Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Liberty 2 Degrees pre-close investor conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. If you should need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I'd now turn the conference over to Mr. Daniel King. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Thanks everyone for joining us in our Sandton offices, and thanks everyone who's joined through the conference call. I'm going to be handing over to Amelia and Tim to give us an overview of how the last six months have gone and business prospects as we head into close period. Following which we'll open up for questions here in the Sandton office, and then for questions through those who've joined the conference call. We will have to be a little bit strict about time, looking to wrap up at about 2:50 because the Liberty 2 Degrees team do have a call at 3:00. Thanks very much. Over to you, Amelia.
Thank you very much, Daniel, and good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for attending, and also thank you for those on the conference call that we can't see. I'd also like to introduce our team that are here. I've got José Schneider, who's our Financial Director, Jonathan Sinden, our Chief Operating Officer, and Gareth Rees is our Investor Relations and Finance Executive, and then Catherine Evans, our Business Manager, is also here. We are pleased to present the Liberty 2 Degrees pre-close operational update as of today, before we go into our close period on the 1st of June. It reflects a steady performance across the portfolio in some rather challenging market conditions. We have therefore themed this update "The Steady Ship in a Stormy Sea," due to what we believe this portfolio being one that just continues to keep well afloat and present some opportunities in the market where there are little or no growth at the moment. Through our effective asset management and initiatives that we've in place, we've built momentum to continue to deliver on the strategic pillars and strategy that we communicated to strengthen the resilience and performance of our portfolio. For the period, in addition to the implementation of our strategy, our annualized portfolio trading density is 42,000 rand a square meter compared to the retail industry benchmark of 34,000. You can therefore see that we've had some good positive growth overall still in our portfolio over this period. We continue to have very low retail vacancies at overall at  2.2%, with Sandton City remaining at a very negligible 0.3%. The vacancies there are purely for some tenant churn. We are excited to have completed installation of the solar photovoltaic plant at Midlands Mall, which will introduce clean energy to the center. We also look forward to the new Checkers Hyper at Sandton City having commenced the upgrade. If you've been to Sandton recently, you would have noticed that that upgrade is ongoing at the moment. You would have seen our very bold announcement regarding the implementation of a plastic-free shopping bag policy across our malls by January 2020, and we have received rather overwhelming support from our customers, the public at large, and our tenants on that. Finally, we are on track to reduce Eskom's exposure to below 4% of our total GLA by the end of 2019. We have confirmed our position as an upfront equity landlord, and José will provide some further details on that a bit later on. If we can look at our sectoral update, the retail sector, as you know, operating in a fairly poor economic quarter. Retail sales were hit by the load shedding and restrained trading as consumers remain under pressure amid the weak economic growth. We have seen in some instances where, in periods where there were load shedding overall, that some of our centers actually benefit from that because they do have full generation, and we see specifically some of our foot count improvements over that time. Despite the pedestrian growth in the industry, our centers continue to achieve some positive trading density growth. We are pleased to report our trading density across our assets, Sands and City, for the period ending to March. These numbers are all to the end of March. We don't have the April numbers as yet. To the end of March, Sands and City's trading density up by 5.2% year-on-year. Nelson Mandela Square showed a nice turnaround from negative previously to 2.5% up. The promenade hovering between 1% and 2% that has shown over the last while. We had a slight negative 1.6% at Midlands. And Portobello continues to show some good growth, albeit of a low base. The retail leasing remained encouraging, with 14,000 square meters of new deals that were concluded across the portfolio. We have introduced Sportsman's Warehouse, Tiger's Milk, and Miniso at Eastgate, and that has added some nice new tenants to the tenant mix. With regards to developments, I mentioned the new Checkers Hyper upgrade at Sandton City. We are really excited about this because the new Checkers provides us with an opportunity to right-size the store, as we previously mentioned, and provide a more diverse and improved experiential offering, which will include 7 new departments that are unique and will be a first for the Checkers brand. This gives evidence to the hard work that our teams put in to ensure that our strategic building blocks continue to influence our development initiatives, and thus enabling us to remain at the forefront of retail and at the same time continue to create world-class experiential spaces. This Checkers project is due to be completed by the beginning or before the festive trade in December, and I think you can really look forward to the opening of a new world-class supermarket at the end of the year. I'll ask Jose to provide you with a little bit of an update on Eskom and then to talk about the office portfolio.
Thanks, Amelia. Good afternoon, everyone here and on the call. We are continually looking at managing our exposure to Eskom in a pragmatic manner. As you'll recall, at the end of last year, our exposure to Eskom was 5.34% of our gross GLA. Our current exposure is 4.55%, and as Amelia had indicated, we had already reached agreement with Eskom on reducing that exposure to around 3.7% by the end of this year. As all of you are aware, the Eskom restructure is currently in implementation, and there were 3 options available to landlords: either subscribing for equity up front, a delayed equity subscription over a 24-month period, or reducing your rentals over a 24-month period in return for some equity participation. At our year-end results, we had indicated that we were leaning towards being a delayed equity participant or paying for equity over the 24-month period. Now that the agreements are in near final form and we have consulted with income tax, VAT and accounting experts, we have elected to become an upfront landlord. We have evaluated the risk of paying for the equity upfront and having received rentals for the next 24 months against the adverse consequence of paying some income tax and some bad leakage in the transaction in the way that we are structured. And we have decided that the risk of Eskom falling over in the next 24 months is far outweighed by the adverse tax consequence. With Eskom's restructuring their capital base, converting all of the interest-bearing debt into equity, we don't believe that they pose a financial risk for the next 24 months, and therefore the commercial consequence between being an upfront landlord and being a delayed participant is largely reduced. So what will happen is we will pay for our equity up front and we will receive our full rentals on Eskom for the next 24 months. The impact on valuations as a consequence hereof will be marginal. For most of the space that we are taking back, we are already in discussions with various tenants on taking up that space. And we will make further detailed announcements around this as part of our mid-year results. There will obviously be some fit-out period and there will be some tenant installation as a consequence of those deals. But we believe it introduces a better tenant mix. It's a longer-term leases than some of the leases that we are giving up on Eskom, and therefore we complement the portfolio. And we don't anticipate a significant impact on the asset valuations as a direct consequence thereof. In terms of our office portfolio, offices remain a challenge in a difficult economy with an oversupply of office space, especially in the Sandton node. Our current office vacancy is 10.3%. which is slightly up on our year-end figure, but still below the SAPOA rate of around 11%. We continue to focus our efforts on leasing initiatives to bring this down, and we are currently in discussions with tenants to take up about 4,400 square meters of GLA at HM on 5th, which we hope will be concluded and we'll be able to announce at our mid-year results. That will bring our vacancy down to around 9%. The overall portfolio offices are a lesser component, and our vacancy in the overall portfolio is still at very healthy levels. Amelia had made reference earlier to our strategic building blocks, and I'll allow her now to take us through what we have done in implementing those over the last couple of months.
Thanks, Jose. During the first quarter of 2019, we've made very good progress in the implementation of our strategic building blocks and continue to do so as we future-proof our portfolio for being ready for the very rapid changes in retail that we are experiencing here and all over the world. So, you know, those five are around embracing technology, curating experiences, time is valuable, community placemaking, and sustainability. In terms of embracing technology, we've entered, as we indicated at our Eastgate site walkabout, that we entered into a partnership with JC Deco to implement strategic advertising initiatives at our malls, and you will start seeing some of that implementation coming about. In progress in terms of technology is the launch of our malls app, and that we will see towards the latter part of the year. In the first quarter, we have held a number of initiatives to curate customer experiences. We did the SA Fashion Week. We celebrated Eastgate's 40th birthday, and we had a number of other initiatives that drew a large amount of people to our malls and continue to provide them with the experiential offering that we would like to see in these environments. What we have in progress is the installation of unique baby change facilities with seats where people can sit, feeding booths not only for moms but also dads that want to come into the malls, enough space for prams to get in, food warming facilities, etc. And that is, we're rolling out the first one at the Checkers, as part of the Checkers development, we're doing that at Sandton. We'll also be doing a VIP lounge and valet parking at Sandton City, and something that we'll look to roll out in our other malls. In terms of time is valuable, I think we all know and experience that we don't have time, so the time that we have to use that very efficiently, and that's really to try and make sure that our customers can get in and out of our malls as quickly as they want to, or have the opportunity to stay if they so wish. But they must come there because they love being there. We've implemented the launch of the My Sandton City stop and e-hailing points to ensure convenience for our customers, and that has really made a big difference. And if you haven't seen it, it's here in Fifth Street, right next to the entrance, where people can actually be dropped off safely and collected. Further, we are looking at introducing of a shuttle service that we will be rolling out across our portfolio. And the whole issue of e-hailing and sorting out the differences between Ubers and taxis are part of a process that we are busy implementing. Community placemaking is really an important part for us. We want these environments that we manage to be a place where people want to go to, a place where they want to be seen, want to meet their friends, be with their families, and not somewhere where they just want to go and shop. And that is something that we see that successfully across the world. We have implemented that successfully. Those are the malls that continue to maintain their position in the market, and we are actively working to do that. Important for that, linking into our pressing focus strategy, is the improvement districts that are happening in this environment. I think Sandton has got a really great improvement district, and we've been involved in it for a while. But it was necessary for us to make sure that we also get that around Eastgate, where there's a lot of new development around that mall, getting involved in what's happening in the environment. So we've launched and are the first members of the Eastgate Improvement District. We're also in the process of rolling out the food districts that we started at Sandton into the rest of our malls so that we can give customers that same experience that they have here, that they can have everywhere else. In terms of sustainability, which is something that we are embedding in the fiber of our business, we have, as I said, launched the installation of the PV plant at Midlands Mall. And we have in progress a lot of initiatives around the eradication of plastic bags. We're also installing a number of different recycling drop-off solutions in our malls. The plastic bags was a bold step to take. I think many, if you have to wait until you have all the answers or you have all the different solutions in place, we'll wait long. So we decided to take this step so that we are able to do the right thing, do what's good for the environment, and work with our tenants to come up with solutions as to what they are going to do going forward. And it's incredible the different solutions that are out there that one can bring into these environments to actually bring into the mall environments to look after the environment at large. In conclusion, we continue to perform well in this portfolio despite the difficulties that are in the environment. And we believe that the focus that we put on executing on our strategy is what's paying off for us when times are tough. We have not departed from what we say that we are going to do. We try and stick with the quality in our underlying environments. And I think the continued demand that we see for the space in our malls, I think, underpins that. And we believe that it is as a result of sticking with what we said that we are going to execute on. We remain well positioned for growth, which is supported by the underlying portfolio. Our balance sheet remains strong and with good capacity. I think in the times where people find themselves, that is something that where we have a different benefit and which will stand us in good stead over the next while. Our continued implementation of these strategic building blocks will enable us to continue to deliver on the sustainable and organic growth that we have promised across our portfolio, and we continue to see that coming through as we have communicated previously. And we hope that through that, and we see that through that, we will deliver the distributions that we have promised for this year. In short, we believe that this gives testament to the theme that we've got for this update, and we indeed believe that the LTD ship remains steady into a stormy sea, As at 1 June, we enter into a close period, and we release our half-year results for the period ending 30th of June on Monday the 29th of July, and we'll have a presentation on that same day to take you through the more detailed results. I'm happy to take any questions.
Thanks, Amelia and Jose. Before we get back to the conference call for participants, I'd just like to open it up to those of you who are at AVS office currently. If there are any questions, please go ahead.
Offices, I mean, there sounds like there's a little bit of improvement in terms of letting, but I mean, the vacancies are still high. I mean, still in a high vacancy. What's that like trajectory for office vacancies look like? Because there's net 2020, there's 16% in lease expiry coming up, which is quite big.
Our expiries are largely in the center and south for offices. Other than the offices where Liberty is a tenant, we don't expect those to become empty over that period. But the leases in the Sandton Tower are short-term leases, so there will always be a lot of expiries coming up. And we've seen that tower probably for the last few years operate at a steady state. There is still a lot of pain in the office sector. We still expect reversions to be under pressure and potentially even negative. And our primary vacancies remain at HM and 5th and 1000 Mandela Square. It's just, again, testament to an oversupply of A-grade and B-grade offices in the Sandton area. But we are slowly chipping away and looking at alternatives, including co-working spaces, etc., that we hopefully will come to market with during the course of this year.
I mean, you talk about potential negative reversions, leasing, but is the one component. The other side is, you know, what TFT offer in terms of TIs or rent fees. Have you seen any change there? We've had to offer more in the last 2-3 years.
We haven't yet extensively cut what or, I mean, as a supplement what we offer to existing tenants. The balance for us is always between if we have guys in the tower, especially, which is a large component of our offices. We haven't needed to do that. Obviously, there was a big reversion on the standard bank space that we negotiated on that standalone office. But when we're talking about the multi-tenanted offices, what we have to maintain a balance of is not destroying the current income stream by offering so much discount and tenant installation to new tenants coming in, that all of your reversions or renewals of existing tenants start becoming an issue. We've maintained that vacancy rate quite healthily, and we don't want to destroy the current income stream. We have had to keep on rental reversions, like I said, on the standard bank space for the type of environment that it was in. But those standalone offices don't renew very often.
I mean, some of the competitors, I mean, you guys must know, like, we're finding them, are looking at, like, WeWorks and, you know, trying to farm out some of the vacancies. I mean, what's your take on it? Do you think that's a longer term, that's a solution for this problem? Or do you think the market structure is going to sit like this in the next 3 years, whether it is a WeWork or co-working or whatever?
I think, you know, it's no new news that the amount of new offices that were built over the last 2 years have been enormous in Sandton and in Rosebank. And those, there are no new demand in this market. So until we've seen significant economic growth in South Africa that will create new demand for people needing office space, I think structurally we'll sit with the vacancy. I don't have the stats with me at the moment, but enormous the overall vacancy in San Francisco.
300,000
square meters. And there's a lot of new things that have been built. So people are just shifting around. So I think, you know, if you look at the international trends around co-working, there is a lot of that trends coming through, but we do not have co-working opportunities in Sandton. We've got Spaces, we've got Regis. What is the other one? Good, something else.
Discussion with a couple.
But they, you know, so yes, it's absolutely something. I think where it's going to is the trend where we'll start putting those co-working opportunities inside the retail space, and probably not in Sandton because there is no retail space available. But in places where there are retail space available and that space needs to be repurposed, that some of those co-working opportunities will start going in there. So I don't think, I think co-working is certainly an answer. It's not the only answer to it. I think we really need to see some economic growth to create new demand.
And also to just give up space to a WeWork model, you have to look at the economics behind it. I mean, the TI that you spend, if you amortize it over a 10-year period or the period of the lease and you assume that same TI, the IRR on those kind of things, evaluate what we are investing into that kind of space versus the rental that's achievable. We've yet to see a sustainable model for that in the SA context, apart from the Spaces and Regis offerings, which are slightly different. But the type of investment that a WeWork required needs careful evaluation.
You could hang out these stakes in a lot of the assets, some of the assets. The one issue don't have, or the one issue do have, minority stake is not controlled in our arch.
Okay.
Would you still consider keeping the asset if you don't have control? Kind of changes that you like to make?
So I think what we have said in terms of strategy, we want to control the management of our assets, because the implementation of our retail strategy specifically, and the food sink one, requires us to be the ones that drive that through. And then secondly, we want to be more retail focused than a big office focused component. So in terms of that strategy, we are evaluating the assets that we have that sit outside of this, and we'll work to see how we can execute that in the best possible way.
Just
one from me. In terms of your retail assets, if you can just describe in general terms how your comprehensive cost of occupation has been evolving in the last 5 months, whether you anticipate that impacting your bargaining power in terms of lease renewals, how you think that sits right now relative to what you would consider sustainable levels.
I think as we communicated when we released our results, there's little benchmark for comprehensive cost of occupation in this market, and we have been trying to get the benchmark providers to kind of bring out something so that we can start to have a look at it vis-a-vis the rest of the market. But we haven't seen a significant shift in that since the end of last year. I don't think in this year it has deteriorated that it's impacting our tenant negotiations. However, I think this is what we had at year end is probably intact now, and we've had some specific initiatives in place to drive that down where rates were up, etc., etc. And we will have to continue to evaluate that as we trade off against our turnover growth, because turnover growth for us is a lead indicator that really tells us whether the tenants are going to be able to pay the rental or not pay the rental. And as we go forward, we will, through our sustainability initiatives, we drive down our costs, and the way we drive our or improve our environment, drive the turnover, the ability for a tenant to trade better. So from a retail point of view, we see that continuing to give us the leverage to be able to negotiate the rentals that we need. It is early in the year. Most of our retail renewals come to the back end of the year, so we haven't had the opportunity to close out many of those. So when we have better information around where that will land, we can bring that back. We've probably been our full year numbers, not even at half year, because we will not, close out a lot more in the next while. But I guess my point is we haven't seen a deterioration in the CCO through anything specifically that has happened in the last 5 months or since we reported it in February.
Yeah, just on that point, several other companies only really quote rented turnover. Say on your centres, your portfolio, roughly what would the differential be, just if you had to use only rent to turn rent to sales versus total, just roughly?
Yeah, you sure haven't heard my thesis that I really do not like that measure. Because
I just want to get you to see what the other companies roughly. I know it varies from centre to centre.
The thing is, Leon, the problem is with it, and we saw it specifically as we're negotiating the Edcon deal. Rent is what? Is it net rent? Is it gross rent? Is it rental plus cost? And as we went through this whole Edcon issue, it became very evident that leases are structured in such a different way that rent as the base actually gives you such a destroyed measure. That is why we went with the CCO ratio that includes everything.
No, I think that's right. That's what the tenant is, the total cost. Yeah.
So we don't even look at our rent to sales ratio anymore, so I can't tell you what it is, because it's a meaningless indicator for us because of this the distortion in the underlying rental, what you use as the base. I think we have traditionally disclosed it, and traditionally ours in an environment like Sandton, it will always be higher than what you would have in the normal benchmark. But then you look at Sandton's trading density, it's 54,000 rand a meter. I mean, you can't compare the asset.
Acquisition that is dilution in earnings, but enhances the portfolio, complementary to the portfolio quality.
We are considering a number of acquisitions. As we said, we've got some balance sheet opportunity in our balance sheet. It's a very difficult trade-off because cost of capital at 9.5%, you can't buy quality at 9.5%, that's the reality of it. But there's quality out there that, yes, will be slightly dilutive, but have got good growth opportunities. We could get involved in applying our management philosophy over it, and do what's good for it and put it in this portfolio so that we can execute over a bigger base of assets. So we're looking at a number of opportunities that we are evaluating to try and see what can we come up with that in the best interest of all the different pieces and to see how we can move forward on that.
I think for the first time in a while we have a somewhat distressed seller in the market of retail assets. Does that change the way you might think about pricing the Liberty property portfolio, say, you know, further tranches of that relative to what else is transacting at the moment?
I think historically we've always said that the operational metrics, if you look at it in this portfolio versus competing portfolios in the country, the valuation metrics are too narrow. The difference between the best performing super regional and regionals are not wide enough. If you look at the trading densities of those centres, the rentals that those centres are achieving and the return of the assets. I think what we are seeing in the marketplace right now is that becoming evident. Everybody is questioning valuations. Our view is on our assets that they are conservatively valued. When you look at our operational performance compared to our peers, we do think that certain assets in the market are significantly overvalued.
Just in a municipal valuation, I mean, update on my East Gate, I mean, where does it stand on that?
Yeah, so the valuations appeal board meeting has finally happened in the last couple of days. We believe that we have been that the outcome of it has been fairly positive, but we haven't received the documentation back from them. So we will be in a position to communicate the outcome of that at our half year results. And believe that it will be the outcome will be to the positive. To the extent of it, we'll have it in our results. It's an important outcome for the property industry,
yeah,
because it sets a precedent as to where the valuations are going to go at large. So it was very, very important for us to get this right. And our team has spent an inordinate amount of time and great care in ensuring they get the right outcome.
So what extent it's tough out there, to what extent are you kind of defensively trying to retain tenants as much as possible, or if they're not trading well, as you mentioned earlier, you prepared to let them go, be sufficient demand of better tenants to come in? I mean, is there sufficient demand to be able to kick out the weaker tenants?
I think you've got a slightly different scenario at Sandton, Eastgate, maybe from the smaller, they're not small assets, but from the other assets. At Sandton, we can probably be a bit more prescriptive around what we want because the list of demand are fairly long. There's still some international tenants that want to come in, etc. But overall, as a philosophy, to keep a tenant, to get them trading well, to create an environment where we provide them with a wealth of information out of our own management initiatives and data that we have to help them to perform better, to tell them your store is too big, let's make it smaller and continue to trade, or to assist them with customer data. I mean, we've got an enormous amount of unbelievably good customer data, foot count, foot traffic, the impact of weather on the foot count, the days of the week that it trades well, promotional activity information, Wi-Fi data, there's a myriad of it. And we prefer going into a partnership with that tenant, helping them finding the right size for their store, and get some other people in there to help them trade up than lose them. So it's a long answer to a short question, but it's much better to retain a tenant unless there is a really poor performing tenant and you've got a queue of people standing that want to come in there.
Can you quantify the impact of the whole economy structure?
We will have no tax impact. But the reason we've elected to go up front was so that we don't have a negative tax consequence. It would not have been significant, but we just thought that Edcon is going to be around for the next 24 months, given all the capital that they are receiving. The only reason we wanted to be deferred was for that risk, and that risk is now largely gone. So we are happy not to face the tax consequence. but it would have been a marginal number, probably 3 or 4 million rand. Yeah.
You make an interesting statement there when you say, given the amount of capital you're spending, they'll be around for the next 24 months. Makes me wonder whether you think they're going to be around in 72 months. Regarding that, I mean, surely taking the 41% mark and having the flexibility to manage the space and relate it to other tenants might have been a better option.
It wouldn't necessarily have translated into all of the flexibility that you refer to. I mean, the primary store that a large component of this deal hangs on is Sandton City. And that, through the negotiation, we've got the best deal that we believe possible in the circumstances. So it's not that you would have taken it and had complete carte blanche on taking back as much space as you wanted. A large part of the business case rested on them still maintaining performing stores in our portfolio that have largely been performing.
But as I made the point is, we have taken back a significant amount of space from them. We're taking them to below 4% of our overall GLA by the end of this year. And the space that we are taking back, we have relet at large. So reducing their exposure, they are now way below the limits of some of the other retailers. And that was a key piece for us to get done. So all the non-performing stores in our portfolio are not there anymore.
Thanks. I'd just like to give our conference call participants an opportunity to ask questions if there are any. Operator, do you have any questions?
Nothing at this stage, but ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, should you wish to ask a question, you're welcome to press star then one on your touchtone phone to place yourself in the question queue.
Okay, thanks very much. I have a question about bank branches.
About?
Bank branches within the retail centres. This is a question that I get a lot. I'm just wondering whether it's something that you feel you may need to be proactive about, considering structural change in that sector. And whether there are any CapEx-light alternative uses for that kind of space in South African malls.
I think there are a few points around that. So there are some of the banks that are still desperate for space that are not represented in Sandton, for instance, that we're addressing through the Checkers renegotiation and give them some space. The banking question is not one of now. I think it's been around for a while, and John can maybe add some of that as well. But we have been working with that then to change the space around. In places like Promenade, for instance, and those of you that have been with us ever to Promenade would know that the banking space, they are huge because the queues, etc., that they have to deal with on a weekend and on pension day and on the SASSA payout day, or they have to keep those tenants in there. But they are forever a quest to right-size the space. Standard Bank has closed down in Mara's Arch. I'm sure that maybe that's where the question is coming from, and it was one of the branches that they have chosen to close. But, you know, the team are close to them in understanding where, how they can turn those spaces around. This is also an option for some co-working opportunities. The front of the bank becomes a place where, especially where those banks are linked to a distribution force, where those distribution forces start using the front pieces of the bank to use as their meeting spaces to distribute on. So there are some engagements around that.
Have you had pressure from the other major retailers approaching you after the deal and trying to negotiate a better terms?
Yeah, I think it's a well-known fact that there was a letter by one or two of the retailers in December. After we received the initial 41% rental reduction proposal, we therefore have worked hard to not give a rental reduction and to go a different way. And we haven't had anyone coming to us for an equity contribution.
The hotel.
The hotels are very cyclical, up and down. The January, February, this first part of the year are normally not a great indicator. We haven't had these hotels for a very long time. The market probably marginally a little bit down, but not so significant that we have great concern around it. Convention Center, as an example, have done very, very well, and that spill-off into the market is something that is positive. We are concerned, though, about the potential number of new hotels that are being spoken about for the Greater Sandton node, and we'll have to watch that carefully and see where that lands.
Just, I mean, with the hotel, given that like occupancies are low 50% regardless of what is the continental, even if they get up to 60 and they stay there, I mean, it's difficult to get their par increases.
The occupancies are over 60% already. They are 67 to 69, and that's in that region. RevPAR, I think, have been holding quite well. We've seen after the Sandton Suns redevelopment 2 years ago that has had a nice impact on the RevPAR. The Interconti is due for a slight soft upgrade towards the end of the year that we built into the price when we bought it. And that intercontinental link is good for the RevPAR of the big tower. So the business that are struggling is the weekend business. You know, it's not something that in the Sandton node does particularly well. It's dependent on business.
The hotels are basically, let's call it, propped up by air crews, government, and corporate business. And the reason why they pick the air crews, for example, pick the likes of Sandton is because of the security that comes with those particular hotels. The inauguration has obviously been a great benefit for the three hotels in that they were fully booked. And the Sandton Sun, for example, there was talk of Obama attending the inauguration. I don't know if he did it, but the Sandton Sun is one of the few hotels in Johannesburg that can cater for the needs of a former head of state. The hotel was active of heads of state. So the hotel itself is, after the refurb, so the rate was previously lower because we've been managing these hotels before we bought them into the Liberty 2 Degrees stable. And they're slowly building up the rate post the refurb a couple of years back. So the hotel is a good hotel. They've recently refurbed the sand bar, the sand deck, whatever it's termed, and that's obviously getting a lot of clientele. So it's a strong hotel. The Garden Court maybe suffered a bit last year after the opening of the Lux Hotel. I think it was the signature Lux Hotel. But now people go there, they realize that the service isn't quite the same. I think it's a one-star hotel with no amenities to it. And after they've stayed there, the ones from a curiosity factor, they go back to the traditional hotel. So, and that's performing quite well again post 2018.
Thanks. Operator, do we have any questions coming through from the conference call?
Yeah, no questions on the line, sir.
Okay. Thanks. If there are no further questions here, I think we can just about wrap it up. If you do have a question that you didn't manage to get through, please don't hesitate to email me, daniel.k@avior.co.za, and I will make sure to follow up with the L2D team. But if there's nothing else, thank you very much, everyone, for your time. Hope you do have a great day further.
Thank you very much.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this afternoon's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.